He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Baby, you can drive my car.
Good morning to our show of Car Keys with Jada Markin and Robin Leach. We are in the middle of a maybe hopefully consistent spring thaw as this show is being done. We have mud all over the place as the frost is coming out of the ground from the dirt roads to the under the pavements, and lots of pavement and road surfaces are adjusting to the warming temperatures. And one of the amazing things that I have noted as I've been driving around our northwest corner, many miles of which, and this includes some of New York State, were paved in 2025. And let me tell you, the new pavement brought more silent tire for noise and smoother riding for many of us. But it is astounding what's going on right now on paved roads in terms of ground shift underneath the asphalt. It's causing fissures in some of the newer paved roads, the older, newer paved roads. It's causing cracks across maybe where there was once concrete under them. I don't know that your tires are. And this is some of the new pavements are doing this. There are cracks that are going perpendicular to the direction you're traveling on the road. And then there's some fissures that are opening up on either the northbound lane or the east, you know, the southbound lane on a north-south road or east and west. I don't know whether they are going to settle down and merge back so that the cracks disappear, or whether they're going to require some repairs going on. The dirt roads, as we know, we have many around our listing area. Sharon is full of them. They put mud season signs up on many of them. Salisbury has fewer of them. Matter of fact, I'm not sure we have any dirt town roads. Oh, yes, we do. River Road along the Housatonic River is a dirt road. But driveways. My driveway is a mess of deep tread marks in the mudded areas of the non-paved section of the driveway. And I'm going to have to roll it.
Why don't you pave it once and for all?
You haven't given me the money yet. Going beyond this topic, AAA has got some two topics which I picked up on. I get a lot of emails from AAA in my email because I'm a member. And one of them is there are a ton of tricks you can try to maximize your miles per gallon. I was reading some of these, and Jay will get a good kick out of it. I'm not going to read all 36 because many don't pertain to the drivers around our corner, as far as I'm concerned. One of them that I say here says, avoid buying gas when there's a delivery truck at the station. Well, that may be an old wives' tale that may or may not be relevant today, but they say recent deliveries stir up sediment, which can clog your filter, causing your engine to possibly stall. I do not know. It's possible that this is a valid point to follow if you knew that the tanks at the stations around where we live were older and or near empty. I'm not sure that deliveries deliver sediment in the delivery portion of the fuel when they fill the tanks up. So if the tanks are new, I'm not sure there's a lot of sediment in the tanks, but I sometimes follow this suggestion, but sometimes I don't, because I'm not really concerned about that happening as much as it might have been in the days in the past when the tanks were old and hadn't been replaced.
I just think it's a good idea to stay away from gas stations when they're delivering fuel, but that for a whole other reason. But
yeah, that could be a safety factor that may be well thought about.
So, hey, Robin, about AAA. So what does AAA sell? What do they do? What do they cover?
I'll keep it relatively simple. I didn't know about the two levels of towing distance that you that were very different when you first signed up for AAA. And the first few years, fortunately, I didn't need it. Well, I found out about it when I needed the towing and found out that the basic membership level only got you 5 miles of towing free, after which there was a charge of 25 cents a mile or something. So I certainly upped my membership to the whatever status I've got now, which gives you 100 miles of towing range, which is significant for people around here, especially if you want your vehicle towed to, and it's new, and you want your vehicle towed to a dealership that you purchased your vehicle from or that services your particular brand of car. Because we don't have, we only have what? We have one dealership within 5 miles of some of our villages, and that's in Millerton, New York. Everyone else is, for dealers, is 25 miles away or more. So 5 miles doesn't get you much around here, except it will get you to some service stations if you are lucky enough to have broken down or need a tow within 5 miles of the independent repair places around, of which we have several excellent places to use. But back to your question, if you are a member of AAA, you can get a discount, a credit card from a gasoline supplier, Shell in this instance, and you can save 10 cents a gallon if you purchase your gas with your Shell card that you get through AAA.
So how much you pay for it? What is your AAA subscription?
I think it's about $60 a year. I'm not quite sure. I'm on auto renew now, so I'm not paying. But it's not too expensive.
As cars, but it pays for itself.
It becomes much more valuable, I've found.
I mean, if you're getting
their own tow with their own free towing, Audis. I don't know about BMW and Mercedes, and I don't know about domestic car makers whether or not you get free towing for through your warranty period with Ford, Chevy, or Stellantis.
Well, that was going to be my next question is, you know, you have some of those tow or rescue packages available both through insurance companies, you know, on your regular insurance policy and or, like you mentioned, warranty you know, extended warranties that you have on your vehicles.
Or even basic warranty terms.
So, you know, my only thing, I guess, is to make sure you're not getting overinsured and paying for the same insurance in two or three different places.
Correct. It pays for people who buy cars to know what they're getting in this department and know how to use it. I do not know whether that it's just, you know, whether they're any more effective. I have never found when you've had to use AAA that you got quick service. I have found that most terms or timelines from the call to the actual arrival of the vehicle to save you is around an hour. Now that's gonna differ depending on where you're living and whether you're living in an urban area where there are lots of gas stations and maybe more than one AAA supplier of AAA services. We have one, or we had one in Canaan. I believe Arnold's used to be a AAA member, and I think they had discontinued their services under the AAA moniker. The last time I had to use AAA, the truck came from New York State. I believe it was like 40 minutes away. And so that was the nearest AAA person that could get to me in an hour or so. So you don't know how long it's going to take you with the Audi system or the Mercedes system or with any other non-AAA system. It depends on who's a member of those particular manufacturers' towing plans, same way with a AAA.
Well, I can tell you that it's if you're really paying like $60 a year, which seems very little to me. I can tell you it's a lot less than what I'm about to pay here in Europe for the equivalent service on my little car that I have here. And because that amount is like well over $200. So,
well, as cars get older, it's probably wise to have a coverage plan, because around here in our rural driving zone, when you break down with a flat tire or you run out of gas and you want to try to use those, I do not know that trying to call AAA to get 5 gallons of gas delivered to you is necessarily an efficient use of the AAA system, since we don't have AAA members within, well, I don't know how close the closest one is. Maybe there's one at Jack's service down 22 down south of Armenia. Jay, you may know where that place is.
I call them for a friend over on a weekend a few weeks ago, and
Jack's directly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not anyway. All right. So AAA, get AAA.
Okay. Let's go down the list. Save money with self-service. Yes, many places many places, not around here, fortunately, have cash versus credit card pricing. The credit card pricing is 10 cents above the cash price at many places. You'll note I'm going on 22 and down towards 684. If you read the signs carefully, you'll find that there are two prices for each grade of gas. One is 10 cents more for using credit cards. So if you can pay for cash, you can save 10 cents a gallon. As we are broadcasting this show during a spike in both oil, diesel, and gasoline prices, that may be something you may want to focus on if you're really sensitive about the prices that have gone up, in some cases over 30 cents in the last several days from the time this show was done, and it's still climbing. It's 3.39 in Sharon. It's 3.27 in Lakeville right now, because Mobil, which is the Lakeville source, and Shell have not raised their prices in the same time frame, although they're both serviced by the same wholesale delivery firm company in Tarrington, Connecticut. They say, keep your eyes open to find good prices at the pump. Boy, am I doing that. I do not know how many people really care. Around here, we have two stations within 6 miles of each other. They are within usually 10 cents of each other, if not identical, or a couple of cents cheaper, because they are serviced, they sell products from the same wholesale delivery. I'm not sure that the independent names of the fuels are really priced because of different cost levels at the wholesale level or not. It's voodoo economics in my head.
Well, it's still only half the price of what people pay here in Europe.
Yes, I know that.
We're at around €2 a liter, which is €2 is arguably a little less than $2, but a liter is there are 3.8 liters in a gallon. So basically, they're still paying twice as much as we are.
What is diesel over there, Jay? Because diesel's hit 4.89 in some stations here, as low as 4.09 in others. I've noted that because I know you have the Touareg. I'm always thinking about you hunting for lower diesel fuel.
Diesel prices here are, I don't know where they are.
Are they closer to gasoline all the time, if not cheaper in Europe?
It is now. Decades ago it was not, but ever since they've been trying to get diesels off the roads, they have priced diesel I think it's like 20-30%, give or take, over the price of gasoline. Speaking of gas prices, I'm always appalled when driving cars that require premium gas.
Yes.
Premium gas is actually, I haven't been I've been out of the country for a week or two, but diesel is usually cheaper than premium gas. So there's sometimes no rhyme or reason to these prices, but they are going to go up.
Sharon, that is not the case, but you're right. It's usually been cheaper than premium gas here in the U.S., as I seem to recall. But let's go back to a few of the other things. Item 9 now, it says, keep windows closed when traveling at highway speeds. This is all about wind turbulence around a vehicle causing to use more fuel if the air does not travel smoothly over and around the configuration of your car. You know, if it's hot out, I don't like air conditioning. I don't play with this as worrying about using more gas if my driver's side window and or another window is open in the summertime situations. Think ahead and approach.
Let me tell you something. My only experience is driving. You know, I've never measured the difference between windows open. But between, I've driven a convertible over 1,000 miles a few years ago, and half of that was with the top down, and half of that was with the top up. And the whole time I was driving at highway speeds, even with the top down, and the increase in fuel burn, so the mileage went really way down when the roof was open. There's no doubt about that.
That may well be true, and thank you for commenting on that.
If you're going to have a convertible, that's what you want to do.
That's true. They keep windows closed when traveling. They say open windows cause aerodynamic drag, which consumes fuel. Well, lots of things control aerodynamic drag, and one of the other ones it does is improperly inflated tires. I think there's more drag if the tires are underinflated. I do not know about overinflation causing drag,
that creates wear on the tires.
That creates wear in the tires. And they also say, okay, gas mileage usually decreases rapidly over 60 miles an hour. That may well be effectively true.
I use
the cruise control a lot, which is another thing they suggest. And I know, and I also am monitoring my instant fuel. I have the capability of monitoring my instant miles per gallon feature in my Jeeps, or the average miles per gallon on many of my cars. And if I reset the trip computer to zero when I start out, I can monitor the miles per gallon over that particular distance of a trip. I'm not paying attention to many of these 36 items that AAA has got in their recent publication online or otherwise. They say if you have a manual transmission, don't keep your left foot on the clutch pedal while driving, Jay. The slightest pressure puts mechanical drag on components, wearing them down prematurely and therefore using more gas also. Avoid driving along rough roads whenever possible.
Is this a AAA or an AARP magazine you're reading?
No, I'm reading online from AAA.
Okay. Hey, so I want to
go ahead.
I was on a road trip just a few days ago. Came back from Switzerland back to Belgium, where I still am for a few days, with only a 5-hour difference. I just learned. Time zone wise. What was I going to say? I drove about 2/3 of the way back on that trip. And I thought about you because I did not use cruise control, but it is highly recommended to do so. The speed limits have become incredibly strictly enforced here in Europe. And even with all the electronic gizmos to detect radars, there's just so many of them that you're basically driving the speed limit. And this is going back to my point that if you're going to have speed limits, and yes, they do work, enforcing them in an equal way really is the only way to go and the only way for people to follow speed limits. And you know what? It was very relaxing, except for the fact that I was constantly monitoring my right foot. And speed limits are somewhat reasonable, except in cities. You go down to, you go through little towns, whether it's Switzerland, Belgium, France, Germany, and you're down to 30 kilometers an hour
Which
in
is
the
18
center of
miles an
towns.
hour, right? Or
18
roughly.
miles an hour. And which brings me back to thinking about, when we go through towns, not so much Sharon, but if you think of Salisbury or Millerton, and during, for instance, 18 miles an hour is, or 20 miles an hour is not that unreasonable. And
True.
you do get
Especially
used to it.
Jay, especially in our small town, Salisbury, for example, and Millerton, for example, where they have these blinking lights that people push to cross the walkways. I think you should go through these, and you've got cars parked on both sides of the road, so sometimes you can't see the people stepping out until they've stepped out in front of, beyond the cars, the width of the cars parking on either side of the crosswalks. I think the 18 to 20 miles an hour would be a much more practical way. And I watch people speed through. They come cruising into Salisbury, for example, coming from east or west. You really do need to brake and step down, especially when you do go through the middle of Salisbury, where the crosswalk is very has very poor pedestrian visibility, in my opinion. So that's not a bad idea.
On the other hand, in Switzerland, we went through little towns, in the mountains in the Alps, where between these little towns and these twisty roads, I was driving probably, I don't know, somewhere around 30, 35 miles an hour, 50 k's, and then I enter a little town, and I see a sign, speed limit as you're entering town, 60 k's, and I'm going, what in the world? How could I have even been going faster than 60 k's before I entered town? So the Swiss seem to have up in the mountains seem to be pretty liberal with their speed limits.
Well, let's talk about the speed limits versus the enforcement limits, because I've talked on this show several times that I go roughly 8 miles per hour above the posted speed limits doing my trip to
No
work.
tolerance. No tolerance.
Yes, in Europe, no tolerance.
No tolerance.
Well,
I've learned.
I bring this up because when I was in Italy some time ago. And I rented a car, and I talked a little bit about it. I was trying to travel with the traffic, and you know how this. I don't know how well you know about what the speed limit enforcement in Italy is. It doesn't sound like it's as onerous as it is in Belgium and maybe Germany and France.
No, Italy is a little different.
You have the Autostrada, and which is sort of like the Autobahn, right? And people, the Italians, are crazy drivers anyways, and they like their high performance vehicles, and they make use of them. But the posted speed limits is usually around 100 to 110 kilometers an hour. It's mostly the standard seems to be 100, which is what, 60-ish in our miles per hour. And there were areas where, yes, you knew there was a radar event ahead, because of either a blinking sign or other some, or maybe you knew the drivers knew about something going on, and you paid attention to the speed limit. But otherwise, it wasn't a limitless alternative, but it was certainly 10 over 10 kilometers over any posted speed limits I experienced in much of the Italian driving that I did when I was there in Italy.
Yeah, what they do in France and Switzerland and Belgium is a lot of not scanners. So they'll scan the
The license
speed.
plates, right?
They scan. It's just like an easy pass. They just scan every license plate and then remeasure, the time it takes you to go the next 10 miles or so,
Oh, is that
and.
effectively there in Europe? Because we all discuss that possibility on something like the Mass Pike at exits.
It
And
could be it's easy to implement from a technical standpoint. And again, if you want to enforce speed limits, it is the only way to do it. Now, do I like it? Of course not. But that's a whole different thing. I think everybody should drive the speed limit and then
well,
make exceptions for me. But that's, Probably not going to happen.
Let's just go through a few more appropriate things for the country driving, because most of these 36 things are, you know, if you tried to remember all of them, you'd probably get nowhere fast if you utilized everything. They talk about snow tires. Take your snow tires off at the end of snow season, because snow tires eat up gasoline because of the coarseness of the treads and the depth of the treads. The deeper the treads, the more fuel you're likely to use, because deep tread tires cause, again, more drag, along with open windows, sunroofs, ski racks, roof racks. Well, you should take the roof racks off if you're really concerned about saving as much possible gas as you can driving. They create drag as well. And you've got the cross racks, which probably create more drag than the ski carriers. I do not know, but they also, I guess I'm mostly done with this particular topic, so we'll move on. AAA came out with an article about how long do lithium item batteries last. And they basically said, unless you get a problem battery, they last for the life of the car. Jay, you've mentioned this in Tesla information way back when the Teslas were out, and you said taxi drivers or people that were driving 100,000 or 200,000 miles in a Tesla or an electric car never had to change their batteries most of the time. It was once a concern of mine about battery life of the electric batteries. I've had a Hyundai Sonata Hybrid, which is, I believe, still not a lithium battery, that has a lifetime battery guarantee. It is now, what is it? It's a 2013. It's now 12 years old. It's got 135,000 miles, and I still apparently have a lifetime guarantee on it, but I've never had a battery failure. And I've known people with Priuses that have gone a long way without a battery failure as well. Battery replacement is an expensive proposition if you have a battery pack that is gone beyond its warranty and does fail after the warranties. I think most of them have been like 8 years or 100,000 miles, which is quite a long term, and many people aren't keeping those particular cars for that duration. So,
So speaking of electric cars, you make me think. When I got here a couple of weeks, about 10 days ago, my usual taxi driver drives a Mercedes, and was telling me that he had gone to the Brussels Auto Show and seen the BYDs, and said without a hesitation, his next car would be a BYD.
Yeah, you told us that on another show recently.
Did I? Okay, sorry, I'm getting old.
No, it's all right. It's the electric car industry in our country, in the U.S., is sort of in shambles right now.
Here too.
Laid off building all electric cars in many cases. Ford with its F-150 pickup, I believe Chevrolet has cut back on a few of their all electric vehicles. If this fuel price increase that's going on right now were to hold, as you mentioned in one of your emails to me that I got, it might be a time. You said there was electric vehicle leases are extraordinarily economical and cheap.
Yes. I can't remember which one that was.
I've seen some ads for some electric vehicles that seem extraordinarily cheap, leases on them at least. I'm not sure about the prices, but the leases on them have been, under $400 for a 36-month lease, and maybe some cases under $300 a month. As we come to a close on all this discussion about how to save fuel and your driving, we will
drive less.
Drive less. That may be the final advice for this week's show. Car Keys with Jay DeMarkin and Robin Leach.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.